Welcome to another edition of Shedding Light here on KZSU. And today, a couple of questions, folks. Are you tired? Feeling pressed and underappreciated? Low on energy? Grumpy? Sighing a lot? Headachy? Backachy? Losing your creative edge? Are you on the edge? Do you calendar more of a wish list than a schedule? Well, today, in the control room with us is Dr. Linda Hawes Clever, and she's written a book about all that called The Fatigue Prescription. And no stranger to this show, she's been on the phone with us about 6 months ago, and she'll be on Stanford campus this Thursday at the bookstore at 6 o'clock, right here at 519 Lawson Mall, for a book event. She'll be signing your books and doing some reading from it. And once again, welcome back to Shedding Light, Dr. Clever.
What a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And I do want to just, the introduction on you is quite extensive, and so I can't read all of it, but you are the founding president of Renew, a not-for-profit aimed at helping devoted people maintain and regain enthusiasm, effectiveness, and purpose. But also, the list is, you're also a member of the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences, adjunct clinical professor of medicine at Stanford, clinical professor of medicine at UCSF, former editor of Western Journal of Medicine, and founding chair of the Department of Occupational Health at California Pacific Medical Center. One question, where did you find the time to write this book?
Well, I'll tell you, you could ask my husband just as well, because he noticed that he was feeling a little bit neglected. I would go to my writing office, which is in our downstairs, and I would always do the cooking and all the things that needed to get done, but Jamie missed me.
I bet he did. Now, that brings up my next, I hope I did my homework on this, but I was really struck by what caused you to write this book, and it's in the front of the book, and it really struck me real hard. And I love the way you put it too. You said you didn't think much about overdoing it, except about applying bandages to patients and friends, until the wheels fell off your own life. In one 18-month period, your parents died, your house was burglarized, you lost two jobs, and your husband was diagnosed with cancer. And this is what led you to a journey, and at the end of that journey, it's not over yet, but this book came out of that, The Fatigue Prescription. Speak about that a little bit.
Well, it was a terrible time, and I hasten to say that Jamie is fine now, and he's recovered, and that was a great blessing. What I learned from the time was actually a few things. One was how important friends are. And I had known that friends are important to have good times with and to have conversations with and so forth and so on. What I didn't understand was that friends who are really friends are there when you are low, not just when you're high, not just when you're having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that came out of that experience was a deeper appreciation of the importance of friends and how to keep them and how to get them and so forth, because it takes 3 years to make a friend. And that's why so many of our friends come from college or when we were, you know, intensely with each other. And then the question is how to keep those friends, because for most people who've had busy lives, they have very few friends, actually. So one whole area was about friendship. Another was, as I started to recover and up Periscope and kind of look around, I saw that a whole lot of people were tired for a whole lot of reasons. And it might have been grief, which is what I was having.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's being overbooked. Sometimes it's not being appreciated. Sometimes you think you were in a groove and it turns into a rut, and you don't know the difference. So there are a lot of reasons, and I'm not talking about depression, which is a medical illness where people feel hopeless, helpless, and worthless. And I'm talking about the kinds of lives that busy people have, where you get to the end of the week and you think, what did I accomplish? What did I do? was it really anything very worthwhile? Or you get so busy that you stop savoring anything, and you go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, and never kind of think back and say, wait a minute, what did I learn? What was fun? What felt good or bad about that? What wouldn't I do again? We're very good at worrying, but we're not so good at thinking sometimes.
Has life in America led us down that path to that? Because it seems like life in America has gotten real busy as of the last 15 or 20 years.
When you look at the statistics comparing Americans to others, we have much shorter vacations, much longer hours. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because we are pretty productive. The thing is that when we're in those busy, busy times, and I've heard people have said to me, you know, I want to be better than busy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make contributions. I want to make a difference. But when we're in the busy times, we almost get hypnotized, and we almost lose our sense of being able to be creative, our sense of taking on new things, our excitement. You just get kind of dulled, and that's what happens when you're in, when the groove turns into a rut.
Yeah, and the fatigue prescription, your book, gives four steps to renewing your energy, health, and life. And one of the things we had a conversation with the last time we met on the air when you came in on the phone was this renewometer. And one of the things I really enjoy about your book is, it's not graphs and charts, but it's some great tools for kind of checking how you're doing. It's almost like a workbook that you can use. And there's a lot of different things I want to touch on this interview. One about things I can or can't control, but this renewometer really was great. It's a series of ten questions, and they're very pertinent to everyday life, and they really fit. And you've got a scoring system here where you can kind of rate yourself. Speak about the renewometer and how you came up with that.
Well, the whole book came from listening to people and valuing people. And that's why the book really is for everybody. I started out thinking about physicians and how important it is for physicians to be fresh and excited and, you know, at the top of their game. Well, it's the same about nurses, and it's the same about school teachers, and it's the same about clergy, and the same about attorneys, the same about volunteers. Anybody can get tired doing good.
Yeah.
So listening to people, and then doing a lot of research on psychology and anthropology and what makes a difference in people's lives is how we came up with the renewometer, the 10 questions. And we refined it by offering it to people and, tinkered with the words and so forth and so on, doing the usual kinds of science that you do with a questionnaire. All of the questions are based on reality and research. One of the ones that, well, you might have a favorite one. Why don't you pick one?
You know, I loved them all, and they go in great order, too. The first one is, how many times did you really, really laugh yesterday? Number two is, how often did you learn something new? The third one is, how many times in the past 3 days did you or others think you overreacted over a little thing in a big way? Number four is, how often in the past month did you feel trapped, a prisoner of circumstances? That would be almost every day for most people, wouldn't it?
Oh, boy.
Number five is, how often do you typically have conversations with friends outside of your profession? Which is a great lead-in to, who are we talking to? Six is, when did you last feel bold enough to take a risk? Seven is, how many sit-down dinners did you have with your family or friends in the past week? And that's something that we all know Americans don't do that much anymore. How many times in the past week did you spend more than 1 hour refreshing your body or your spirit, not counting eating or sleeping? And that's something that I think Americans have gotten way away from. How often do you consider your own aspirations when you make decisions? that maybe not of your kids or your other folks in your family or coworkers? And when was the last time you encouraged someone? These are amazing questions.
Thank you. Well, it's compliments to the people who made the comments that got woven into the book and into the questions. There are a couple. One of the great pleasures of this is seeing how people use the book and how they react to the various questions and as they're checking boxes and so forth in the mm-hmm. book. And just the other day, that last question is how often have you encouraged someone lately?
Yeah.
Was in there because people have said so few of us get encouraged anymore. Everybody's going so fast
yeah.
that they never say thank you. There's not much of an appreciation. They never say, gee, you really did well on that bread that you made or that flower garden or that report. So that's why the question was there, to remind us about the real interactions of each other, and that when you encourage something, that the Latin is great, and means in, and the word courage is based on Latin cor, C-O-R, which means heart. Because when the Romans were going off to war, which is what they were doing all the time, mm-hmm. their heart would beat fast, the way everybody's does, and so they thought that their heart was the source of their courage. And so cor, heart, and courage all have, that's the etymology of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the word encourage, though, means is you put your heart into someone else.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't happen very often these days unless we're aware of it. Well, what happened the other day, someone who had done the renewal meter, and she got to that question, and she said, that's what exhausts me. I'm encouraging people all the time.
Hmm.
That's what exhausts me. So it was the exact opposite of what most people said. But her work, it turns out, she's working with elders who are in health that's not very good and may not have great memories and so forth. So she's always, you know, kind of pushing people, you can do it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
The point of the questions actually is that is the first step in the four steps to renewing your energy, health, and life. Is the first step is awareness. So the questions are to raise your awareness. This particular woman needed to be aware that she was exhausted by her work,
mm-hmm.
and she hadn't realized that. Other people may need to be aware that they haven't had a sit-down dinner in a long time, and the reason that's in there is because we know that children of families that have sit-down meals, it may not be dinner, it could be lunch or breakfast, but those children do better in school, have less premature sex, less drugs, less alcohol, and they fasten their seatbelts.
Interesting. The guest is Linda Hawes, Clever MD. She'll be at the Stanford Bookstore here on campus this Thursday night at 6 o'clock. She'll also be in Palo Alto. Is it November 4th? Am I getting that right?
You are right.
November 4th in Palo Alto at the Stanford Health Library at the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center. And that's at 3921 Fabian Way. And you can get all this information at the fatigueprescription.com, the website for the book, right?
Yep.
And Dr. Clever, you're knocking me out with this stuff. Now, the four steps, awareness, reflection, conversation and plan of action. Plan and act. Speak about how you came to that, because that those four things right there, awareness, reflection, conversation, plan and act, that is it. That's kind of the roadmap of the whole gist of the book, isn't it?
That's the deal. Those are the four steps. I, Bird, you're asking a terrific series of questions.
Thank you.
I think it came because I listen to people, and that's what people do when they are feeling terrific, when they're feeling great, when they're climbing out of the rut, when they feel refreshed, when they feel, one person said, I feel like a mushed carrot. As we were going around and people were saying, how they're feeling this, the next person said, well, I feel like a mushed rutabaga. And then it just got terrible.
Hmm.
Well, those aren't good ways to feel. So listening to people, what do they do to move ahead get that sense of vigor and regain their creativity. The first thing is awareness. It's smell the coffee. How are things going in my life?
Mm-hmm.
How am I feeling? Great, not so great, and how are the people around me feeling? And that's in the family, at work, in the neighborhood. You know, does the neighborhood ever get together and have picnics, or do we, you know, kind of try to hit each other in the crosswalk? These awareness, if you're not aware, forget about it.
Yeah.
So the second thing is to think about it, is to reflect.
That's what got me a little bit. The reflection one might think should come later on, right? But you get into the reflection, like, so become aware.
Yep.
And then reflect back on
how did
your
it
awareness.
Get this way? Exactly. How did it get this way? How did I get so busy? What's my motivation? Is it part of my values? Because we'll talk, I figure, about values, because values are the basic part of one's energy and the source of one's meaning in life.
That is going to be my next question. You jumped the gun on me.
Sorry. So, you know, am I living my values?
Right.
So that's the reflection part.
Next, and that must lead into the next one, which is conversation. Have that conversation.
Have the conversation with yourself, with other people who you respect, who may be dear in your life.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, sometimes it's a stranger on the plane. You get some insights. The reason the conversation is in that those steps is because we don't have very many good conversations these days.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Twittering, and I'm not talking about email, and I'm not talking about texting. I'm talking about sitting down with someone you think highly of and who thinks highly of you, or again, it could be a perfect stranger sometimes, and talking about some very important things, such as what are some alternatives? Saturday was talking with a very busy, very skilled person who said, you know, I really want to do some writing. And so she was asking me about writing.
Did you encourage her?
Oh, absolutely. Of course I encouraged her. I put my heart into hers. And I said, though, start simple. This John Gardner was an extraordinarily important part of my life and many people's lives. And he was on the faculty here. He started Common Cause. He was secretary of HEW.
Mm.
And one of the things that, and he was important in getting Renew started when all these had the setbacks. One of the things that he said, which is not intuitive to people who are driven, which most everybody we know is driven,
mm-hmm.
he said, don't do the hard things first. And so as we were talking about writing, he and I, he said, collect threads. And this is what I told the woman on Saturday. He said, just write down an idea that you have, or if you see an article or if you read a book, put it in a file. And after a while, the file gets more than one piece of paper or more than one, if it's on your computer, make sure you back up your computer. You'd feel bad if you lost all that stuff. You'd feel bad.
Sounds like you have.
Oh, you're looking at it. Any rate, so the conversations can come when somebody says, you know, you're kind of doing it the hard way. Or they may say, I've done it differently. You see, part of a conversation is that we don't have to have every idea in the world. Somebody else has had a good idea or had his experience that plays in. And again, not to get too linguistic about this, but conversation is also a wonderful word because con means with, as in consensus,
okay.
And versus means turn. So when you're in a conversation, it means you're willing to turn with someone to perhaps 5-degree difference, or maybe you make a 180 flip.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a sense of respect and eagerness and willingness. And the question that you were having about, you know, is this the sequence, you know, awareness, reflection, conversation, then plan and act. Well, after you have a conversation, you might go back and reflect some more.
There you go.
Or you might get a new awareness and, you know, kind of start it again. This is not, I'm sorry to say, it's not an overnight pink pill,
mm-hmm.
quick fix.
But you put up a nice little roadmap. And when you talked about the conversation just a little bit ago, you mentioned, and possibly a conversation with yourself.
Uh-huh.
And I find that useful sometimes. And, you know, if I'm not with someone, but I can have that conversation, I can reflect and look. you know, and sometimes I'm even talking out loud to myself, and I don't think I'm crazy for doing it. Am I, Doc?
Definitely not.
No, is it that if I answer myself, I am, or is that okay
No,
too?
If the orange juice answers you.
Okay. We're talking to Dr. Linda Clever here, the author of The Fatigue Prescription. She's going to be on campus this Thursday, October 14th at 6 p.m. at the Stanford Bookstore. You can catch her. Are you going to be reading some from the book?
If people want, it's really interesting. We actually usually start off doing the renewal meter and
really?
Talking about some answers, not deep and soul searching, but just mm-hmm. kind of what struck people. And then we'll talk about values and we'll talk about what people want.
You know, this might be a great tool for students because especially here at Stanford, and I'm sure students in higher learning arenas are being driven beyond belief now.
So much of what we do is our choice, and that's what people don't often understand. So yes, we're driven, but just your previous interview, the person you interviewed, as she and I were talking as she left, mm-hmm. she said, you know, I'm going out and take a walk. She said, I have to take care of myself or I can't stay up.
Wow.
So we have what we can control. I mean, there are kind of three things on a good day: behavior, attitude, and aspirations.
There you go.
And so if you have a calendar, which most of us do, you can put me on the calendar and you can put go for a walk. If you don't put it on the calendar, it won't happen.
Right.
So yes, it's extremely important for students. There are all kinds of data to back this up. I mean, this isn't just listening to people. We know that people are more creative and innovative when they come back from the vacation. We know that people are more open-minded and kind of have a lot more zing on Monday than Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, TGIF isn't just, you know, that's not for nothing that people say that.
Yeah.
So that the wisdom that we have of taking a break, I'm not talking necessarily, you know, 10-year break. I'm just talking maybe just taking a big breath can be a break.
Yeah.
To use our wisdom not just for facts and not just for discovering the next new thing in the world, but for discovering about ourselves and taking care of ourselves. This is the bumper sticker, which, as someone pointed out, must be the world's longest bumper sticker. So it starts on the driver's side, and it goes all the way around the back, and it goes all the way. But at any rate, it is this. It is not selfish to take care of yourself. It's self-preservation so you can do what you want to do and what you need to do. That's the deal.
You think Americans have gotten away from that?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, not everybody. We take better care of our cars than we take care of us. I mean, we put gas in our cars. We don't put energy into us very much.
Yeah, we've heard recently, too, that, and this has been going on for years, but now it's finally kind of filtering this way. Spain, all throughout Europe, especially in Spain and Italy, lunchtime comes, everything shuts down for 2 hours.
Yeah, everything has its ups and downs. It's kind of like weather, you know. In Florida has hurricanes, we have earthquakes, Nebraska has tornadoes, whatever. The idea of shutting down for 4 or 5 hours every day probably does cut the
productivity
and the output.
Don't they have a 2-hour lunch? Isn't that the thing? From noon
and
to two?
It's good.
Don't expect to get anything done because everybody's gone home to have lunch or whatever they need to do.
And it's a good thing.
If you think about it, if you're going to go have lunch, wouldn't it be nice to have a little time after that to take a nap or relax or take it easy? This is some of the information in your book.
It's true, especially if you don't drink at that lunch.
You're
having a little vino there. It kind of cuts into your...
Well, that's a whole other ballgame.
Well, there you go.
Moving along now, what about values? Because that plays up in this, and you've mentioned it. As a matter of fact, it's not a chapter, but it's a good piece in the book.
Well,
Speak about values.
It comes again and again. You know, that's the kind of pedagogical approach. You repeat it, and then you drop it, and then you bring it back, and you bring it back. So it's in the book in several different places. So what most people who give themselves some thought come to realize is that their values, living their values, is the source of the meaning in their lives. And that, in the West, that is the Occident, that's what we're looking for, most of us, is to have meaning, to make a difference, to have that sense of accomplishment, whether it's with wonderful music or wonderful science or art or whatever, being a wonderful parent, these sorts of things, the sense of making a difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The roots of that meaning are our values, and our values are how we decide what's good and bad, how we decide what's right and wrong, how at the end of the day or week or at the end of our lives, looking back, we said, I live the way that was important to me. And knowing those values and writing them down, and then having a conversation with dear ones, and it can be neighbors, it can be colleagues, it can be family members, it needs probably to be all those people, mm-hmm. finding out what their values are, then we can come to some agreements. If there are differences, that's okay, but then talk it out. And then sometimes, and what I've seen is so interesting, is, for example, when a family has, and I can just tell a story. This was happened to be a physician family, and they got together, and they were saying, you know, how's it going? And the kid said, Dad, we'd really like to see more of you. And he said, well, you know, but I, you know, need to earn the living and you know, have this calling. And they said, well, Dad, we'd like to see more of you. So it turns out that they played baseball, and he knew baseball, and he became their baseball coach, not just there, but other in the little league.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, how did you do it? How did you really do it? And he said, saw fewer patients.
There you go. And I guess that comes down to values.
You've got to change your values.
What's valuable?
He still took wonderful care of patients, mm-hmm. and he was then returning to taking wonderful care of his family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said, that's just have to cut something.
Comes down to choices, doesn't it?
And we have those choices if we think about them and if we talk about them. That's it. We often get in just the whir and the blur and the rut.
What kind of advice would you give someone? Because you've been there, your life kind of temporarily fell apart, and this book came out of your journey back to health and sanity, for lack of a better word. What kind of advice would you give to someone who has, say, three jobs and more than a couple of kids, and might even be a single person, mother or father, and is completely strapped, and they don't even have time for it to even think about stuff like this? What could they do?
I think a couple of things. One, your comment about sanity. It's I gave a seminar on Friday and or Saturday, and the title was "Keeping Your Sanity Despite Dueling Demands." So, because people do feel crazy sometimes, they just feel like they're going crazy.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that I would do first is listen to this person and find out what's really, really, really important to them. Now, right now, we are in pretty severe financial situations, and a lot of people are.
Yeah.
And I think you can't just be blow that off. You have to say, this is serious, and you are exhausted, and you know, you do have to put peanut butter on your bread and your kids' bread, and you do have to pay. I mean, you know, that's true. You can't deny that. The things that after listening to a person and hearing some of their hopes and dreams and what they would like to be doing, if not right this minute, maybe in 6 months from now or maybe 2 years,
mm-hmm.
The things that I would be thinking about and sharing and having this conversation about is, if there's something that you want to learn, because learning is one of the things that keeps us full of vitality and excitement, is there any way to wedge 5 or 10 minutes into a day or into a week of, you know, find a website. If you can't take a course at the community college, can you read half a chapter in a book over a 3 or 4 day period?
Yeah.
It's back to John Gardner's comment of don't do the hard things first. Start small. Take little steps. Sometimes people, and I've also heard people who say, you know, we don't need to get a new car every 3 years. I'd rather spend more time with my parents. My parents are getting older, or I'd rather spend more time in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
So what's really important? What's going to make a difference to you? And try to wedge in some of those moments. Because the curious thing is, and curiosity is such an important thing to have, the curious thing is when we do some things that we love, like learning something, even learning how to cook a new Portuguese sausage dish, whatever, you come out of that energized. So we grind and we grind and we grind, but it may not be any more productive. It may not even be any more earning any more money. And sometimes people decide, you know what? I need to work less and move to a less expensive place.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of choices like that to be made, definitely. In case you just tuned in, Dr. Linda Hawes Clever, MD, is our guest for the hour. She's written the book, The Fatigue Prescription, 4 Steps to Renewing Energy, Health, and Life in Your Life, and possibly somebody you might know, too. And she'll be here on Stanford campus this Thursday at 6 p.m. at the bookstore, and then November 4th, you can catch her in Palo Alto at the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center at 7 o'clock, and it's all on the website of the book, thefatigueprescription.com. In the last 30 years, we've seen American life change a lot. Priorities have changed. It's harder to make a buck. People are working twice as hard for half the dough. And then in the last 2 years, it's almost like they shifted gear. Who are they? I don't know who they are, but life shifted gears. And for middle-class Americans, they almost got knocked down 10 notches. For a long time, they were kind of floating in the middle. And life was, you know, it was okay for middle-class Americans. Now, we know for a fact, middle-class Americans have been knocked down to the point where they're pretty much at the same level of people that were working for them 10, 15, 20 years ago. And are you seeing an upsurge in folks that need this kind of prescription in your work?
I would say yes.
We know it's out there, but are they showing up?
Well, we know it's out there. The thing that interests me is that it's men and women. This is not just
a gender thing.
It is not a gender thing. It's also not an age thing.
Yeah.
Because we hear students who say, I don't want to be like my parents. I love my parents, but I don't want to have that. I don't want to work that way because I want to raise my kids. And then we hear it from people who are toward the end of their careers, if they still have jobs, and some, you know, people still do.
Mm-hmm.
But then they also want to, when they, I don't use the term retire, I use rewire or refire. But at any rate, when they rewire or refire, they need to find something new to get their meaning, because for a fair number of people, having the job, and this is why losing a job is so devastating, it's not just the money, it's sometimes your identity. And so people need to find a new way. I was talking with a fellow yesterday who can't wait. He's got maybe 3 more years, and he's hoping to be able to work those 3 years. He said, I love kids, and I want to do reading work with kids who have reading problems, because I know that's going to make such a difference in their lives. So to find another source of meaning is something, again, that elders look toward, because they don't really want to just sit around like mushrooms. So this is not an age thing. It's slightly different statements of what the concerns are about. I'm tired, or mm-hmm. I've got to find my values, or I need to be creative and enthusiastic throughout my lifespan. I think that some of the increase that we're seeing also are people who are in the trenches, who've been there for 5 or 10 or 15 years. Their economics are really fine, but they've lost their glow.
Mm-hmm. And they know it.
And they know it.
And they're trying to figure out how to get it back.
And sometimes it's the spouse who has noticed it.
Honey, it's not like it used to be.
That's true.
We come in contact with a lot of younger people here at the radio station, and I find it quite invigorating, because I get a chance to kind of take their pulse just talking to them. And what I've noticed is that the younger generation has come to grips with the fact that they're not going to live like we did before them. They're going to live smaller, more compact. Technology has made it so they can carry their whole world in a little satchel in their laptop. They don't carry a bunch of books and papers, and they don't have a lot of stuff. I knew a modern day couple just a few years back, and I walked into their apartment. They had just been married right in San Mateo, and there was two sticks of furniture. There was one computer, and I'm thinking, where's your life? And it wasn't just the computer, but I mean, they had their life organized much smaller than folks say over 40 or 35 or whatever are used to. And you think that plays a big part in this?
Well, I think that what I know as a physician is that people need to have whole and healthy lives. So their mind needs to be alert and ready to go, and their spirits need to be high. And in the book, we talk about spirit and spirituality and even religion as a source of strength that some people find.
Mm-hmm.
They need to take care of their bodies. We need to take care of our bodies. And whether it's going for walks or whether it's surfing or whatever it is, we're not just pulsating brains. And the other thing that the book talks about, too, that it's so important to have a whole and healthy life is, yes, it's learning. Yes, it's attitude. Yes, it's aspirations. And it's also relationships. And so, as I said earlier, twittering isn't the same as a relationship. It may be with that person about, in 140
characters.
Words or less, yeah, mm-hmm. Right. But that's not necessarily the same as love, and it's not necessarily the same as showing up when somebody's had surgery, and it's not necessarily the same as writing a note when their mother has died, and it's not necessarily... So that, again, my goal is for all of us to have whole and healthy lives, and that really is body and what we eat. And one of the things that has interested me so much as people are thinking about the natural world, there are interactions between natural, herbs and so forth, and medications. And that's in the book, too.
I enjoyed that part of the book.
Well, just because something's natural doesn't mean it's healthy for you, like
right.
Poison oak, like bee stings, and so forth. And so... As we think about how can people have a life of meaning, they have to have a body, they have to have a soul, we all pretty much have relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what the book is about. And people have curiosity in all of those areas.
Do you think stuff has become a religion in this country?
Well, for some people, less and less, though, because they
lately,
can't.
Lately.
Yeah.
The last
just
couple
lately.
Hours. Yeah. I see them selling a lot of their stuff at garage sales.
It's true. And that may be part of an adjustment that's going to be good for everybody.
Yeah.
And we'll have to figure out how the people who make the stuff earn a living. I have great confidence, though, in the resourcefulness of human beings. We've been through adjustments before. I don't want to sound silly about it, but we're pretty good at solving problems.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about control now. You have a great segment in the book on control. And in renewing workshops now, your nonprofit, Renew, you guys do workshops. And there's a whole website for Renew, isn't there?
Renewnow.org. Yeah, all one word, renewnow.org.
And in the workshops around the country, you ask, what can you control? Find out what you can control instead of what you can't control. And the things I can control, the list you've come up with is great. My aspirations, the dog sometimes, what I put in my environment, my priorities and my actions, what I worry about, who I spend time with, information flow, my mouth. That's important. My clutter, that would be my stuff. The way I treat others, my decisions, sleep. What I want to learn, the food I eat, the clothes I wear, my attitude, my mood, my reactions, how fast I drive, what I do in my free time, what I read, my hair color, and how I spend my money. And how did you come to these Where did this list come from?
This is what people say.
You put out some feelers. And
listen,
then,
in our workshops and seminars, and even in when I'm doing keynotes and talks and so forth, I ask questions, and this is what most there were many other answers as well.
This was the top 20.
The top 20 or so. What some people might quibble about is the item sleep. Because some people feel as if they really can't control their sleep at all, or that they have to not get enough sleep in order to get all the work done. And there's not surprisingly, there's a section about sleep too.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, as I was looking into the sleep part, first of all, you can say, well, unless you have, as our daughter and son-in-law have, twins who are they're now 8 months old, but when they were 1 month old and 2 months old and 3 months old and 4 months, there was, controlling the parent's sleep was not much of an option. But so there's some times in life when you can't go to bed at 10 and wake up at 6. But most people need 8 hours of sleep to do their best work. Thomas Edison didn't, but most people do. As I was looking in ways of helping people sleep besides taking pills, which is really a bad idea, one of the things I learned is that caffeine, the effects of caffeine last for 24 hours.
Wow.
It's not just you don't have a cup of coffee, stop drinking coffee at noon or stop drinking coffee at 6 o'clock p.m. or whatever.
It's what you had in the morning.
It's right.
Wow.
That's right. So there's that. The other thing is about bed. I don't want to get real personal here, but people have very different kinds of feelings about beds. I mean, some people, eat in bed. Some people, they watch. I mean, it's like it's a cafeteria. No wonder they're bed bugs, for gosh sakes. Or, they watch TV or they listen to the police scanner. I mean, please. Bed is for sleep and for sex. That's the deal. You look at a bed and you say, whoa, I'm going to have, something good is going to happen here. And I'm going to, one of those two things. If you can't sleep, get up and read a book or something gentle to yourself, though. We're not talking about mayhem here. We're not not going to watch, the nightly news. You seen anything good on the nightly news lately? Not exactly. So, The idea is kind of to get the sleep attitude and the sleep schedule, knowing that there are times when you just can't get much sleep. But sleep is really an important part. So the part about control is you have more control over your sleep than you think.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize you build up a sleep debt.
Oh, my goodness. And you don't make it up in just a weekend.
Yeah. The godfather of sleep medicine has been a guest on these on these airwaves, and I got to interview him, William DeMent.
You betcha.
And he explained how we do build up a sleep debt, and you never catch up on that.
That's right. I can remember talking with someone who had a long training program and said, my mind finally cleared after about 10 years.
Wow.
And
isn't it ironic, too, in bringing up healthcare professionals, especially medical doctors in this country, the practice has been, as far as sleep goes, backwards. Because to be an intern in modern medicine today, don't you have to work 36-hour shifts?
Well, not anymore.
There oh, really?
Was, actually, there has been there have been regulations that training programs have to meet these days. That it's cut down the work week to 60 hours. It's cut down.
So they do 30 and 30?
No. It gets very technical, but people really cannot work long shifts.
Well, I wouldn't want somebody working on me in an emergency room that had been up for 25 hours.
Exactly. It's the same with pilots. I mean, you really want your pilot not to. Right.
Like truck drivers.
Exactly. So that is coming more. There really have been changes in the training teaching programs.
Oh, okay. Dr. Linda Clever is our guest for the hour, and she's authored the new. It's not new, but it's not that old either. What's it been?
Pretty darn new. Well,
about a year.
It was. Oh, it's February of this year.
Oh, it is new then.
It
I'm
was
sorry.
Launched just the twins were born. Our daughter and son-in-law's twins were born on February 14th, and we were just before that.
Okay. The Fatigue Prescription is the book. 4 Steps to Renewing Your Energy, Health, and Life. Linda Hawes Clever, M.D. And she's doing 2 book events in the area this Thursday, on the Stanford University campus right here at the bookstore. And also November 4th at the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center in Palo Alto. You can see all the events and all the information about the fatigue prescription, the book, on their website, thefatigueprescription.com. Let's talk about lifelines. This was a part in your book that really intrigued me because it had to do with connections and how we do need to stay connected. Speak about lifelines.
First of all, I would say that the most important lifeline is yourself.
There you go.
And we sometimes don't treat ourselves with a whole lot of grace and respect. And some of that is, you know, not getting enough sleep, not eating well, not getting exercise, and not having, among the things that we really need to do a lot of is keep on learning, because that's how human beings do the best. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we're just plain hard on ourselves. Those of us who are obsessive compulsive, and that's most of the people I know, and that's all right. It's obsessive compulsive trait, not obsessive compulsive disorder. But the trait, you know, you have to be pretty obsessive compulsive just to get through school. However, we are also pretty hard on ourselves because we would prefer to be perfect. We would prefer to fix everything or control everything, and it turns out we know at some level in ourselves that we can't do that. We're not perfect. We can't control. We can't fix everything. So when we make a mistake, we're very, very hard on ourselves. If we, you know, forget something or get a B or a B minus or a C or a D, somehow we need to shift our thinking and say, we are our most important resource. We're the ones who make our decisions. We're the ones who eat right. We're the ones. And they're actually people I know, and I'm impressed with them, who look in the mirror in the morning and say to themselves, I love you. I love you. Or you're okay. Or they laugh at themselves, or they think highly enough of themselves that they have a conversation with themselves, just like you do sometimes and just like I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. That you're a reasonable person to listen to. You've got good judgment. So first, I really believe that we are our own best and most important lifeline. That also means that we need to be aware of our own signs of trouble. That when something is amiss, which is back to awareness, we need to know our own selves. Now, part of awareness is also knowing our dear ones or our friends or neighbors, and when they're in trouble too, and to be aware enough about others so we can reach out and help them. But some people get grumpy. I was talking with somebody the other day who said the busier she gets, the grumpier she gets with her husband, so much so that she finally gave being grumpy with her husband, she gave it up for Lent. But at any rate, apparently it must have changed, you know, helped the marriage quite a bit. Hmm. But knowing that, you know, when you're grumpy, that means that you're overburdened. Or some people get headaches. Some people get belly aches. Some people stop exercising. Some people start eating too much. Some people stop eating. And sometimes it's, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
So that the lifeline, knowing that we're the most important part of our lifeline, is what are our own signs of trouble. And one of them, and I would just say, is losing a sense of humor.
How can folks be aware of those kind of changes that come on to them? I guess it does come down to the four steps. You have to be aware, get aware of what's going on, reflect back on it, have a conversation with someone or yourself, and then plan and act. I guess
do something about it. I mean, that's what we're kind of oriented toward, doing something about it. Somehow or another, either we have to recognize our own signs of trouble, or our own loss of creativity, or our own feeling bored. Boy, boredom is a major element that gets people exhausted. And it also
is there a lot of that still going on? No,
yeah, there's a lot
of so busy though.
Yeah, I know, but you can still be bored and busy at the same time. You say this is the same old, same old. I'm having to earn a living. I hate this job. I haven't done anything new for a long time, but I have to keep earning a living. That's when you're starting to feel pressed, and you feel you can't take risks, and you get absolutely exhausted. The other thing is to listen to your friends. Sometimes people get so grumpy and so irritable that people stop calling on them. They don't get invited to parties anymore. And then sometimes a friend says, gee, you know, I've just noticed that you're frowning more. Or gee, I noticed that you're crying more. So that the whole lifeline, sustaining yourself, sustaining your friendships, because they are part of the web of our lives, and remembering your values. Those are ways, those are the lifelines that can keep us firm and sturdy and regain our footing. Actually, one of the, Jamie, my husband, has a values that he puts in his C list, having to do with compassion and caring and community and communication. I have an F list, which is not all of our values, but anyway, you know, life is brought to you by the letter F, and it is not what you think it is, but it's family and friends and faith and fun and forgiveness and flexibility. So we have to remember our values and then remember how to remember them.
Mm-hmm. I love your chapter on faith in here, spirituality, because you basically said you left it up to the reader and said, look, however you relate to it, is your way. Just, you know, if it helps, good, and if it's there, great, because that's such a an area of contention, you know.
It is.
A lot of folks walking around talking about, I got the answer and you don't. You got to come my way, or, you know.
Or
what,
the highway and all that.
A lot of misunderstanding going on there.
It's true. And that doesn't help. I really think Rabbi Eric Weiss in San Francisco taught me that religion is when you name your awe. That is, it has a name, whether it's God or whatever. Mm-hmm. Spirituality is that sense of wonder and joy and the marvelous mystery of life out there and things that we don't understand and can't ever understand. And that's the good news, is that we can't understand it.
Mm-hmm. It appears that this latest economic downturn has forced Americans, especially middle-class Americans, to come to grips with their pointless consumerism, and just, you know, the whole treadmill that we got on the last 30 years. And reports are coming back that Americans might be a lot more reflective now and doing life differently. And I wonder if, are you getting any feedback on that at all?
Some of the most exciting things that I've, the most excitement that I've heard people say lately are things such as, you know, we're doing the greatest thing at the beach. We're having a kite flying contest. You know, it's not, I got a new whatever.
Right.
It is, we're flying kites and look at that. Or, we, you know, we help clean up the streams, or
something you would have never heard in the 90s.
Right. It is, there is a sense, and this is why I really do have a sense of that we can solve this. We can lift ourselves out of the muck. By thinking of simple things,
yeah,
and
definitely
sharing simple things.
Linda Hawes Clever, the author of the book, The Fatigue Prescription, 4 Steps to Renewing Your Energy, Health, and Life. Deep stuff, because you were there yourself.
True.
This isn't some clinician talking from a classroom point of view, and you've got some great endorsements here from other healthcare professionals. And how's life for you today, Linda, since the book came out?
Thanks for asking. It's pretty exciting. Actually, I've given up the term journey, and I think about adventure.
Right.
I mean, we're talking big adventure. Some completely unexpected things. There couldn't be anything much different from writing than from being interviewed about the book. I mean, you know, one is, they're both having to do with thinking.
Sure.
But one is, you know, being alone and picking the right word and toying with this concept and so forth. And then the other is kind of being out there. And I am an introvert. And so it's new, and it's quite grand and glorious. And sometime, if you want to hear some funny stories about what can happen at book events, I'm thinking about my next book. If it might be about
that. I was just going to say, there's your next book right there.
Well, I told my husband that there are many, many things to talk about. Besides the fatigue prescription. So I said, I'm thinking about the next book, and I thought he was going to collapse. I thought his knees were just going to just break. And he kind of got pale. And I said, well, we can work this. It probably won't take another 10 years.
Yeah, and tell me he doesn't have to get cancer before the next one.
Oh, Beto, what a terrible idea. No, I think we've got enough material right now. We can go ahead.
You can check the website. It's thefatigueprescription.com. She's going to be on Stanford campus at the bookstore this Thursday at 6 o'clock. She'll be at the Oshman Family Jewish Community Center at 7 o'clock here in Palo Alto. But once again, the website is thefatigueprescription.com. That's also the book. Linda Hawes, Clever MD, I want to thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. I've loved every minute. Thanks for preparing so well.
Well, thank you. And you have a great day. And please stay in touch, too, okay?
Sure.
This has been another edition of Shedding Light, and stand by for some more exciting radio.